Okay, everybody, Parshas Mishpatim, and really the first Parsha since we started, the Torah from the beginning, to kind of shift out of the narrative type of text and shift towards a focus on halachos, right? Lots, if you read the Parsha, lots of random, seemingly random halachos about civil law, ben adam l'chavero. We have Eved Ivri, Ama Ivria, right, Hebrew servants. Different averos, benal lechavero, that end up with a death penalty, injuring people, with people on people, animals on people, different type of torts, the halachas of shomrim, right, the mitzvah to give out loans, there's some shemitah, there's aliyah leregel, right, a lot of different halachos, right, at the beginning, or really through most of the parsha, until about shishi or shvi. Then we get, towards the end, we get a fascinating insight back into Parsha's into the Parsha of Matan Torah, right? Machlokas and the Rishonim, whether this is a continuation or if it actually happened before Matan Torah, right? The Ramban says this is a continuation. Rashi says it happened already. Okay, but basically we delve back into Maabed Har Sinai. We have Nasa V'Nishma, which is underratedly in Parsha's Mishpatim and not in Parsha's Yisro. B'nai Yisrael not say Nasa V'Nishma. There's a story about the Nadav and Aviu, all the Shim Zakenim and Moshe Aaron. They have this revelation of almost like the Kisei HaKavod, some sort of sapphire image of whatever, however you understand that. Finally, the story ends with Moshe ascending to the mountain. Yehoshua is sitting there and waiting for him. The Gemara says that Yehoshua kind of camped down on the mountain or just off the mountain, maybe. And the Gemara says that Akash Baruch Hu moved his allotment of mun so that it would fall right next to him, so that he could stay there and wait for Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, because we do see that when Moshe runs down, Yehoshua is waiting for him. Right, but when they make the egg goes off, so Yehoshua stays there. And that's basically the end of the parsha as Moshe goes up into the clouds. Gemara does just to illustrate that the Gemara just says in Sukkos and Daf Hey, right, that Moshe didn't actually ascend physically into heaven. Right, he went to the top of the mountain, obviously. But then when we talk about Moshe ascending, right, that's already a spiritual concept that Kosh Baruch Hu, the Moshe is for whatever reason he was able to ascend spiritually and then converse with the angels and. Akash Baruch Hu, right? Okay, fine. You can check that out, that Gemara. And then finally, after this week's Parsha, right? This week is Parsha Shkolim, where we read about the Machtzis HaShekel. We always read that before Rosh Chodesh Adar, and Mitzvah Shema should be a very joyous month after a couple of difficult weeks in Eretz Yisrael with the terrorist attacks, etc. We'll touch on that at the end. We're not going to talk about Parsha Shkolim today, simply because it's the beginning of Parsha Kisisa, and that's coming up in a couple of weeks. So we'll save any Divrei Torah that we have about Parsha Shkolim for that, and we'll focus on Mishpatim right now. So let's dive right in. Again, the first pasuk, Veila HaMishpatim Asher Tasim Lefnehem. These are the Mishpatim. These are the halachos that I'm placing before you. The Medrash says that placing before you. What does that mean? Tasim Lefnehem. So Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, put the halachos in front of them like a Shulchan Aruch, like a set table, so that the Jews can, easily access them, and that's, I'm not sure if you know, but that's where the phrase Shulchan Aruch comes from. But that, again, that's basically a book of setting the halachos right in front of us. Okay, either way. So if you look at Mishpatim, right, most of the Parsha is a slew of random halachos, but not lechavero. Again, we mentioned the Machlokas, the Ramban, and Rashi, whether it's a continuation, but everybody basically asks, right, regardless of when this actually happened, right, in the Torah narrative, right, you have Parshas Yisro, and then you have the end of Mishpatim, which is also Maamad Har Sinai. So why does the Torah interject these random halachos, right, into the middle of the narrative of Kabbalah Satorah? So I heard a beautiful answer from Shlomo Klagsbald, who's the Rav here and at the shul we daven at, called the Teret Nof, and he said the following. He said, when Bnei Yisrael were crossing the Yamsuf, right, so the Medrash says, right, the Medrash explains in Parshas B'Shalach, that the accused, I think it's in B'Shalach, that the accusing angel, right, the Yitzhahara, the whatever it is, the angel of death, whatever angel it is up there, right, was accusing them and asking Kosh Baruch Hu, why are you saving the Jews? Right, famous line, Halalu ov de Avodah Zarah, Valali ov de Avodah Zarah, right? They, both of them are ov de Avodah Zarah. The Jews worshipped Avodah Zarah, the Mitzrim worshipped Avodah Zarah, so why are you saving them, the Jews, and not the Mitzrim? And the Meshech Chachma asks, I don't understand. Where was the angel until now? Right? Where was he during all the Makos? Right? Only now, all of a sudden now, he comes up with this whole great chap. Oh, both of the nations are over the Avodah Zarah. Where have you been? Like, Gosh Baruch has been saving Am Yisrael doing all these Makos, right? The Torah talked about how he separates between Bnei Yisrael and the Mitzrim all the time, right? That's literally every Makkah is like that. So why now? Is all of a sudden he comes up with this idea. So the Meshech Chachma explains that up until now, Bnei Yisrael were what he calls Musharim B'midos. Their Midos were fantastic. Right? They weren't fighting, they weren't saying Lashon Hara, etc. But now, as the different Medrash explains, that Bnei Yisrael had basically split into four factions as to how to deal with what was going on. Right? The Mitzrim were closing in and they were stuck by the water. Right? What do we do? So one faction wanted to go back to Egypt, one wanted to go into the sea, one wanted to fight. Okay, so they were arguing amongst each other. Right, and now that they were split apart, so the angel argued that they should be judged as individuals instead of a tzibur. So the Meshech Chachma goes in to use this concept, right, to build answers to many other questions. Right, it's kedai to see it for yourself, but for our purposes right now, right, so he explains that when the tzibur is worshipping Avodah Zarah, so Pasuk says, Hashocheni tam besoch tu masam. Right, that's a part of Pasuk in Achremos, that Kodesh Baruch Hu kiviyachol, right, dwells amongst us, right, within our tumah, while we are tumah. Now, that's not the context of the pasuk, but he uses the phrase to explain that Kosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol is still with us, right? Even when we're all tumah together, Kosh Baruch Hu is still with us. But if there's a lashon hara and there's divisiveness amongst the people, so then Bnei Yisrael, then Kosh Baruch Hu removes his shechina, right? Chas v'shalom, as if to say, well, if you guys don't want to live together, so I don't want to live together with you either. And this, says Rav Klagswald, is why Parshat Mishpatim is in between Maimed Har Sinai. Why the Bein Adam L'Chaveru Halachos were taught first, as it were. Right? Again, Maimed Har Sinai, Ve'ilu HaMishpatim. Why do we dive right into, right, the Halachos between man and fellow man? Because if we're not able to recognize the godliness in each other, right, the Chelek HaLekamimal, so how are we supposed to recognize the godliness in the Kodesh Baruch Hu? Right? Kodesh Baruch Hu tells us time and time again that he cares about Bein Adam L'Chaveru. Right, and I don't want to say more, but definitely on par with the halachos of Ben Adam L'Makom. Right, for example, right, again, we've quoted before, but the Mabul, right, by the Mabul, Dora Mabul, Kosh Baruch Hu wiped them out, and later in Parshas Noach, by the Dora Flaga, right, by the build the Tower of Babel, so Kosh Baruch Hu didn't kill anybody; he just dispersed them throughout the entire. Throughout the entire world. And at first glance, it's very strange. The Dora Flaga built a tower to rebel against God. But the Mabul, okay, they were a bunch of bums. They were stealing from each other. Hamas, okay, whatever, other evaders, etc. But Kosh Baruch Hu wiped them out. So that's what the Midrash explains. This is our idea, that when there's machlokas, when there's infighting, society can't recover. Right? By the Dora Flaga, they were building the Tower of Babel. They were together, right? The Pasuk says, Vayu, Safam Achad, right? Dvarim Achadim, that they're of one like mind and one kind of message and one mission. So he didn't kill anybody, he just separated them because, listen, they were bound together for a lousy purpose. That's the idea. That we have to view our fellow people, right, as fellow people. I remember a friend of mine told me a story that he went to the bank once to take out some money, and there was a woman I was sitting outside, right, asking for money outside Bank of Poland, right, a little bit not like a standard type of one, like a little bit off, a little bit weird. So he said he felt bad, right? He just got to the ATM, and he bent down to give her some money, and she basically, you know, she explained to him, and he waited, as he's a tremendous tzaddik. So he waited for a minute to let her explain what she's doing, and she needed money for this and money for that, and she had some sort of medicines and whatever. She wasn't looking for, you know, just a shekel handout. She really needed some actual legitimate help. And aside from the money, she said to him, right, while she was kind of saying this in a little bit weird, kind of off, very fast paced way, right, she said to him, you know, you're the first person, right, to view me as a person instead of just a tzedakah box. And when he told me that story, I thought that story was very, very powerful. Because a lot of people, right, again, when we pass people on the street, you know, well, if we give them tzedakah, God bless us. But it's not more than just a reach into your pocket and a grunt and a here's a shekel or here's a dollar or whatever. Right? It's the first person to view her as a person and actually listen to what she was saying instead of viewing her as a tzedakah box. So that's what we got to put the emphasis into Bein Adam L'Chaveru. I would argue it's definitely the more ignored side of the Luchos, right? Again, I'm not even sure how many people think about you know, murder, right? Obviously, that's not something we really contemplate. But the end of it, lo sachmo, don't be jealous, right? That for sure, right? We kind of don't pay attention to either. Whether it's because we think it's not attainable, right? How could you tell me not to be jealous? Okay, that's a dishmuz in and of itself. But definitely the banan lechaver are things that need to be emphasized, and that's what the Torah does, right? By putting mishpatim, right, in between the Mayan Arsina narrative, to kind of emphasize that that is really where we have to start. Okay, moving on. We'll jump to the end of the parsha a little bit, and then we'll come back. A lot of people are familiar with the great Mila that Bnei Yisrael said Nasa v'nishma. Right, Bnei Yisrael said Nasha v'nishma, right? Come on, I think it's Shabbos, Daf Peches. Who taught you the phrase that the angels say? The angels say Nasa v'nishma. It's unbelievable that they put Nasa before Nishma. Because of this great response, you know, Bnei Yisrael merited many things. That Gemara there in Shabbos Daf Peches, right, told us that 600,000 angels came tied crowns on each head, one for Nasa, one for Nishma. Right, Bnei Yisrael said, Kadosh Baruch Hu called them Bnei Bechor Yisrael, right, you are my son and my firstborn. Right, what was so great about those words? What was so great about Nasa and Nishma? Now, I don't want to focus, right, most of those Divrei Torah, what you'll hear from now on, right, when people say, what was so great about Nasa and Nishma? They'll talk about what was so great about putting Nasa before Nishma. Right, the putting we will do and then we will hear, right? That's usually what people talk about. But I want to focus on something slightly different. Because if you look at the text, right, if you look at the Chumash, so the Torah says two other places, right, it records two other places, both in Parshas Yisro, right, and in our parsha, right, like even a couple of psukim earlier, before Nasa v'nishma, but Bnei Yisrael say something to the effect of kol hadvarim or kol asher diber Hashem nase. Meaning Bnei Yisrael already said nase twice without the nishma. Right? So before you even get to what is so great about putting nase before nishma, we have to talk about what is nishma, right? What is so great about nishma? Why did, when they added that, right, why was it so great? And then I can talk about, right, why Nasa came first. But what's so great about Nasa? So I saw a beautiful answer, and a sefer by Rav Baruch Simon called Imri Baruch. He said the following. He said the Gemara in Ksubis and Daf Hey says that Al Yashmiya Adam La'aznav Dvarim Betalim. A person shouldn't hear, right, things, Dvarim Betalim, kind of silly things, pointless things. Mepnei Shehin Nechavos Techila Le'ivarim. Because they enter into the limbs. And the Maral explains in the Chidush HaGadol that a person is like a house. Right? A person's ears are like the door. And since a person is like this kli, right, this utensil that collects things, meaning that man's intellect, right, takes everything into his brain and experiences, right, that he kind of processes through his brain. So if a person's ears are his door into his house, so those are the things that enter into our bodies. That's exactly what the Gemara says. So says Rav Simon, Rav Baruch Simon says, that's why it's so important for us to have, for example, a Masorah transmitted from generation to generation, to person through hearing, right? Because if a person would just read the Torah without any explanation whatsoever, right, it would ring slightly hollow, right? I'm sure you have read a textbook or 10, right, where it's just brutal prose over and over and over. And very often, you can have that experience. If you're just reading, for example, the English translation of the Bible, It's not particularly exciting or inspiring. So without the teacher's explanation, right, without the back and forth, right, the text is at best, you know, eccentric and a little bit off, and at worst, very completely boring and something you'd put down in 10 minutes. So what would happen, Chas v'Shalom, if Bnei Yisrael lost their willingness to listen, their ability to listen? Says Rav Matisyahu Solomon, that's exactly the problem with the Ben Sora Mora, right, the rebellious child, right, that we have in Parshas Kisetzei. It says that a child who rebels against their parents is put to death, right, because of the future. Inevitably, he's going to grow into stealing, murderous, right? So we kill him now, right, before he does such terrible averos. So says Rav Matisyahu Solomon, the Mashkiach, I think he's Refuah Shleima, Refuah Shleima. Even if he doesn't, he should feel good. I think he is in Mashkiach in Lakewood, I think, right? So what's the underlying problem with Ben Sora Mora? What's the problem? He steals some meat, right? He steals some wine, or steals some money to buy meat and wine. What's the great clue here that tells us that he's a lost cause? So if you look at the psukim, right? Look in Devarim Chafalav Yudches. Again, or that's the beginning of the beginning of the parsha, or towards the beginning of the parsha. Ki yeli ish ben surer moreh, einenu shomea B'kol aviv v'kol imo. He doesn't listen to his parents. V'yisru so they warn him, v'lo yishma alehem, and he doesn't listen. Right? And v'amru el ziknei ro, and the parents go and they tell the elders, and they say, b'neinu zeh sorera mareh, our son is not doing so good. Enenu shomea b'kolenu. Right? He doesn't hear, he doesn't listen. Notice how many times the Torah says the word listen. So Matthew Solomon says that's the problem. Right? He fails to listen. He's unable to hear. Right? And as we'll illustrate in a second, right, hear does not just mean listen. It means hear and internalize. Right? It doesn't just mean to listen. We'll do that, but when we say Shema Yisrael, for example, right, we don't mean listen, right? You read the English translation, it's listen, O Israel, God is one. Yeah, okay, I heard you. I heard you every day. Right? God is one. What does that even mean? I don't know. Listen, O Israel, God is one. So Shema Yisrael, Nishma doesn't mean to hear. It does, but it means to hear and think and understand and internalize and contemplate. Right? The ability to listen and the willingness to kind of think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Torah and the readiness to learn and delve into deep understandings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to learn the halachos, to have world view of Yiddishkeit, even when maybe it's not the most popular or the most easiest way of life. Right? It's so much deeper than that. That's Nishma. Right? It's not just Nasa. It's not just we're going to do the mitzvah. Sure. It's not just blind faith. It's Nishma. It's also delving in and understanding and trying to come to a greater appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the truth and the emes that he was trying to teach us, right, in the Torah. That's the great lesson of Nishma. And that's, that Koach HaShmiah that we should be bezocha to use that for its ultimate purpose. All right. Let's go back a little bit for another reason that I didn't really organize these Divrei Torah in order. Usually I try to get it in order of the Parsha. But all right, let's go back a little bit to some of the Halachos Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, just because it's Kedai. The Torah says, or the Torah tells us, one of the Halachos that we talk about is a Parsha we're slightly familiar with, if for no other reason that we read it on Chol HaMoed Pesach. Right, the pasuk says, "Im kesef talves ami." Right, if you loan out some money to my nation, right, as hani imach, right, the poor person with you, lo siyelo kenosha. Don't be like someone who's coming to force his hand in terms of the paying back. Right, lo sishimum alav neshach. Don't take interest. Right, don't be a creditor to him, etc. But a mitzvah that probably doesn't get enough play, to be honest, is this mitzvah to hand out loans, right? We obviously hear a lot about tzedakah, and rightfully so, right? The Gemara says in Tainus and Davtes. Hold on 1 second. Yeah, buddy. Okay, let's go potty. Okay, where were we? That's one of the perils of recording a shir at home. okay, again, right. In kesef tavla asami, right? A mitzvah that to hand out loans, and obviously, right. As we mentioned, we talk obviously all about tzedakah, and rightfully so, right? The Gemara Daf Tainis, Daf Tes, says that we're allowed to test HaKadosh Baruch Hu when giving tzedakah. But the mitzvah here, right here, is not necessarily tzedakah, but it's about giving your money out for a loan. Now, I'm not sure how many kids are able to do this, right? Or even first year, second year of college. Students are able to do this mitzvah necessarily, but I did want to mention it because it's something to keep in mind, first of all, for the future. You should be zocha to do mitzvahs with your money, and that's not only, buying a lulav and esrog and paying for your kids' tuition, it's also and giving out loans and helping other people make ends meet in that way. But also the underlying principle here is also very chashuv. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, when he goes through this pasuk in Sichos Moser and Maimer Memhei, when he points out that these psukim that we read, right, these psukim are basically known as Parshas HaChesed, and he basically quotes Rashi, I'm just going to read it in order a little bit. It's almost entirely just quoting Rashi, but the message is fantastic and it's pretty powerful. So it's chashuv to read them keseder. So we'll just read them in order quickly. Right, in kesef taveh asami, right, if you lend money to my nation, right, Rashi quotes over here that Rabbi Shmuel says that every im in the Torah, right, im kesef taveh asami, right, if you lend money to my nation, Rabbi Shmuel says that every im in the Torah is something that's permissible, that's not obligatory, that's an option, right, except for three, and this is one of them, right, meaning chesed is not an option, right, we kind of view, right, chesed as being something that nice people do, right? But that's not true. It's a mitzvah, right? It's not just for the nice people or for the uber righteous, right, etc. It's not just for the or chesed organizations. It's olam chesed yibaneh, right? This is one of the pillars of the world, right? Torah avod gemilas chasadim. Right, and this is chesed. Loaning someone money is a chesed. It's not tzedakah, right? Again, as the psukim illustrate, right, the kavod, right, that you're supposed to treat someone with, right, to kind of treat him as a person, and therefore what that means is, right, again, like I think it's a Chinese proverb that says, right, it's better to teach a man to fish than to give him a fish or something like that. Right, if you're loaning someone money, right, if you're helping them get off the ground, right, helping their business start or whatever, right, you're not making them feel like a beggar. Right, you're helping them refinance their house or whatever. It's a chesed. It's mamash a chesed. And so instead of giving them money, and you would give them money, right? You get tzedakah to give, right? But instead of giving them tzedakah, right, you give them a loan, that's a chesed, right? Just that little phrase change in phraseology, right? Helping them with their suitcase. It's just like helping them with their suitcase or an old lady crossing the street or whatever. Giving them money as a loan is a tremendous chesed because it makes them feel so much better about themselves. Okay, esami, right? You'll lend my nation, right? Rashi quotes here, shelo tinog bo minog bizayon behalva. You shouldn't be mevaze, the person, when you're giving them a loan. There's a special chiyuv, a special mitzvah to act with decency when lending money, right? Money does weird things to people, right? For whatever reason, money makes people feel inadequate if they don't have it, and it makes them feel arrogant if they do. Right, and Rav Chaim points out, right, it's hard for people to do this, right, to be nice when giving away money, when lending someone else money, right? Our natural, again, human inclination, not to say lashon hara about anybody, human nature, our natural inclination is just not to give out money, right, as if it's not ours, right, not to be liberal with lending out money. So he says it's hard for a person to do this, but we have a special mitzvah to be as nice as possible and as considerate as possible, right, when lending money. Et ha'animach, right, your nation, right, the pasuk says, lend out to your nation, right, with me. So Rashi says over there, or with you, right, having mistakel ba'atzmecha ki'ilu ata ani. Right, es ha'animach, right, the poor person should be with you. So Rashi says, you should look at yourself as if you are an ani. Right, the Torah commands us to put ourselves in the borrower's shoes. Right, fascinating. Right, for us to view as if we're the borrower and he's the lender, not in some like fluffy way that like he who really gives really actually receives. Blah blah blah. Okay, that's true, but that's not the point, right? Yes, when you give, you receive, and you create a bond and you create love. Fine, okay, Rav Dessler, wonderful, but that's not the point. The point here is not only to treat the guy who's borrowing the money in a nice way, but to view yourself as if you're the borrower, right? To empathize with them completely, right? To put yourself in their shoes and understand where they're coming from and treat them like you would want to be treated if, Rachman al-San, you needed money in a pinch. The pasuk says, lo siya kenosha, lo siya lo kenosha. What does that mean? Alti dome alav ki'ilu helviso, ela ki'ilu lo helviso. Don't be like to him as if he borrowed money to you. Rather be, right, interact with him as if he didn't borrow money with you. Right? Fascinating, right? When you see this person in shul, act as if nothing happened. Right? Don't carry yourself as if you have one up on this person. Like, yeah, you know, I like, you know, that $1 million business that he just built, I lent him money. I helped him get off the ground. Right? Don't even pretend like you lent him the money. Right? Don't even pretend that there's anything between you except true friendship. Right, carry yourself as if he did not lend money from you. Right, that's again a tremendous high level, but because you probably feel great about your incredible generosity and you know the fact that you can help out a person, right? It makes you feel good, but right, don't even hold that over him. And finally, lo sisimun alav neshach, don't take interest from him. Right, don't take any interest whatsoever. Right, nothing at all, no favors, no nothing above and beyond the money you lent him. Says Rav Chaim, and again, that's just pasuk shot. That's right. We're reading Rashi, right, on the Chumash. What does this pasuk entail? What does this mitzvah entail? Says Rav Chaim, these are all extremely high levels, right, and they're basically pasuk shot in the psukim. Right, Rav Chaim Shmuel, he asks, what these are chiyuvim for everybody, right? For even Joe Shmo Jew, right, the regular Pasha to Yid, these are super high levels. It's not like Hilchos Shabbos, where if enough study, okay, right, you can believe me, you can hold yourself back from tying your shoelace in a double knot, right? You can, if you know the halakos of Shabbos, right, you can do these things. Right, that's for everybody, but it's not a particularly high level to refrain from eating pig, right? For maybe, okay, maybe for some people it is, but it's generally attainable. These are you're supposed to lend someone, you know, real sum of money and pretend like it never happened? Right? These are commanded to every Jew. You're supposed to view yourself as a borrower when you lend someone money, right? And then if you don't do this, then we're taken to task for it. Right? The psukim end. If you look at those psukim in the Torah, that if you don't do these things, and the poor person cries out to Kosh Baruch Hu, Kosh Baruch Hu will listen, and then we'll be liable. These are really high levels. So says Rav Chaim, excuse me, yep, they are really high levels. But when a person does chesed, right, they are raised up to a level that's so high that they are not only able to accomplish these levels, but they're mechuyuv in these levels, that they are obligated in these levels. We get a boost of spirituality, and our level is raised to the point where we can do it. Right? He quotes the Gemara above Basra and Daf Yud. Right? The Pasuk of Mishlei says, it's tzedakah, I think Tomerim Goy, the Pasuk says, v'chesed leumim chatas, something to that effect. Right? Tzedakah teromim goy, oh, teromim, yeah, that's the word. Tzedakah teromim goy, tzedakah will lift up a nation, that's Bnei Yisrael. But the chesed of the other nations is a sin, that's referring to the other nations. Why? Because the other nations, all the chesed that they do is really a chet. Right? It's not for the right reasons. Right? It's really just to benefit themselves, or at least somewhat. Right? At least somewhat. And since their chesed is really for themselves, Gemara says, without the proper mindset, so that's called a chataz, that's called a sin. And i.e. it's better, right, that they not do it at all. Right? Again, calls to mind the Gemara at the beginning of Avodah Zarah, where Kodesh Baruch Hu judges the nations and says, what did you do for the world? And the Romans say something to the effect of, well, we built all these marketplaces and roads and bathhouses. And they say, oh, it was for the Jews. Right? Really? And Kodesh Baruch Hu says to them, shaitim sheva shaitim, right? Something like to that effect. Like, you idiots, right? You built that all for yourselves. Right? For all of you to enjoy. Right? And then the Persians come and they say they built bridges and whatever and did it all for the Jews. And Hashem says, you didn't do for the Jews, right? You did it for yourself, right? Again, you did it all for yourself. Right? So that's the thing from the Goyim. But the Jews do chesed, that's for a kosh, that's for their other people, right? And that's considered to be, that lifts us up. And the chesed lifts us up, it literally lifts us up spiritually to the point where, excuse me, we could attain these very, very high levels. So several lessons from this fascinating maimon. And Rav Chaim goes on, but just to cut it short, several lessons. First of all, chesed is not an option. Right? It's not just a nice thing. Right? It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah just like Shabbos and Kashrus and Lulav, right, or whatever. It's mitzvah Samach Vav, Samach Zayin, and the Chinuch. Right? Sefer Chinuch counts it as mitzvahs. But we tend not to take these chesed mitzvahs as seriously as the Beidan or Makom stuff, but it's real, right, as we mentioned. Second of all, the mitzvah elevates us. Chesed elevates us. Right? It's not just like the default, right, that I teach in the seminary. So you guys, you know, it's not that just you guys go and have chesed because, you know, you're not studying Torah all day. Right, so they do. I guess, well, we got nothing to program, nothing to plug in here on a Wednesday, so we'll just throw in chesed. Okay, first of all, it's not because they can't be learning, right? Obviously, the girls can be learning. That's a shmooze for another time, right? There's plenty for the women to learn the halachos that are relevant to them, etc. That's not for now. But more important, chesed is a huge mitzvah. And to be honest, it begs the question why the guys aren't doing chesed. But okay, fine, that's not a shmooze for now. But it elevates our spiritual character and it imposes on us these chiyuvim, which seem extreme, but they're not really. Right? Don't think you can empathize with someone else. Are you don't think you can see yourself in someone else's shoes? Well, maybe you should try. Right? I bet you can. Right? Even to some degree, right? Without any practice, right? And do it often enough, right? It might even come easy. Right? And finally, the last lesson, more generally, is that don't sell yourself short. Right? Don't think you can part with your money? Try it. Right? You don't think you can avoid mentioning the loan to your friend that he hasn't paid back in over a year or something? Try it. Right? Don't mention it to him. Right? How do you think that guy's feeling right now anyway? Right? He borrowed money from you. Right? He can't repay it. Right? I'm sure he felt like a loser when he had to borrow the money to dig himself out of a hole. How do you think he feels now when he can't even repay the loan he borrowed from a good friend of his? Right? You can do it. You cannot mention it. You can pretend like it didn't happen. Right? Don't sell yourself short. You can do these mitzvahs. Right? They seem hard at first glance, but we have it in us. Right? And that's why, otherwise, the Kosh Baruch Hu wouldn't command us to do them. Okay. Fine. Let's just do one more. The Pasuk says, very, you know, the context is almost cinematic, right? If you are into that type of stuff, v'chirivun an Hashem v'hika ishes riehu ba'aven over a groove, v'lo yamut v'nafal le'mishkov. Two people are fighting. One guy hits another guy, Right, and he doesn't die from the injury, but he falls into goes to the hospital. He's laying there. Right, and the Torah goes back and forth. If he survives, he doesn't survive. Right, if he survives, the pasuk says, "Rak shivto yitain for apor yirape." The guy has to pay him, and the Gemara's obviously go over all the details in terms of how much someone who injures his fellow has to pay him. The Gemara Bava Kamma on Daf Pehei says something. Completely, at first glance, something seemingly totally not related, learns something else entirely from this pasuk. Gemara says that this pasuk gives permission for doctors to heal people. What in the world does that mean? So Rashi explains, meaning a sick person. This pasuk tells me that a sick person is allowed to go to a doctor. Why would you think he couldn't? Well, says Rashi explains, because after all, Kosh Baruch Hu made that person sick. Right? How dare he go to simple flesh and blood, right, to go against the will of the Almighty? So that pasuk teaches me that the Torah allows this, right? V'rapo yirape, right? He will go heal himself. That normal ishtadlus means he can go to doctors and professionals and seek their opinion and try and get better. Ask the Chafetz Chaim, where in the world did you get that from the pasuk? Right? I get it. Okay, v'rapo yirape, meaning he'll go get healed. Okay, there's a concept. But the context is one guy beating up another guy. How much does he pay him if he survives? Like, where? How do we get from there to wondering if we have permission to go to a doctor to heal an illness? V'hika ishes re'ehu. Some guy is fighting with somebody else. He hits somebody else. What does that have to do with anything? So the Chafetz Chaim says that this pasuk is coming to teach us that even if Reuven hit Shimon, right? And Shimon thinks that seems that Reuven is the one, is the aggressor here. Shimon has to know that Reuven didn't really hit him in the sense that it's Reuven's fault, right? The hit didn't come from flesh and blood at all, right? It didn't come from Basar Vadam. It came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Because a person can't do anything to damage you if that's not decreed in Shammai. Really, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kivyochol, doing the hitting. Right. If we don't get mad at the stick. Right. If a person hits, right. I think a dog gets mad at the stick. Right. If a person hits a dog with a stick, so the dog will turn around and bite the stick. The stick is not what's doing it. It's the person behind it. Right. Kosh Baruch Hu is the one, for whatever reason, decided that you needed this X, Y, and Z to happen to you. So therefore, the pasuk teaches very well that it's mutter for us to go seek healing for a hit that, or some illness, or some injury that Kosh Baruch Hu did to us. And for a put your repay, and you're allowed to go assault, you heal yourself for that. Rav Melech Biederman explains that if we approach our negative experiences in this manner, right, instead of looking for those who have wronged us or whatever, or even looking inward to say that, oh, I just wasn't careful, or I made a mistake, or whatever, but we realize that these things, that whatever it is that happens to us, is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then the Torah guarantees that Hashem will help us out of whatever darkness that we're in. Right? Quotes a pshat from Rabbi Avram, Beno Shel Rambam. Pasuk says later in the pasuk, I guess earlier in the parasha probably. I think earlier. Okay, whatever. Vasher lo tzadav elokim inel yadov v'samti lecha makom asher yinus shama. That concept is by the Ir Miklat. Right, maybe it's later, I don't remember. That is by Nir Miklat, that a person didn't plan on, right, killing somebody. Hashkosh Baruch Hu, right, caused it to happen. Right, and then he will make us a place where there will be a place where that accidental, quote unquote, that negligent murderer, the Rotzeach Meshogeg, can run to the Ir Miklat. And meaning, another, but if you take that pasuk and kind of read it in our context, Asher Lo Tzada, right, if you don't look for a reason to pin this bad thing on anything, but you have emunah bitachon and bringing you, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing you to whatever it is, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, v'samti lecha makom asher yinus shama. Right, I'm going to give you a place where you can run to. Right, I'm going to provide you for you a way out. Right, and then we have to look at our lives and things that happen to us, right, as messages from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, and not only things that happen to us personally, but things that happen to Am Yisrael. We have to look at recent events and wonder about the messages that Kosh Baruch Hu is sending to us. You know, the last, unfortunately, in Eretz Yisrael, as we said, we mentioned it, right, the last two terror attacks, right, there was stabbings in the Ve'yakov, and there was a ramming in Ramot. I'm sure Rabbanim have talked about this, and I'm sure others have different takes on it, but that's kind of what it's about, right? We look at events and we see what it means to us. To me, they both happened either on Shabbos or Erev Shabbos, right? So a family in Shabbos clothes waiting by a bus stop to go somewhere for Shabbos. And now, again, I'm honestly, personally, I feel like I'm someone who kind of has Hilchos Shabbos pretty down. But even I am thinking to myself, like, maybe I need to review and up my game and kind of delve back into Hilchos Shabbos. I feel like it's a deliberate message about our Shmir Shabbos. Both of those things happen on Shabbos, on Friday night, on Erev Shabbos. Right? And make no mistake, this is from Akash Baruch Hu, right? And now, and I'm not saying it's a failing of that family, Chas V'Shalom Adarava. The opposite is true, right? These are tzaddikim that have, Akash Baruch Hu have decided to bear this terrible, terrible tragedy for Am Yisrael, right? All you need to do is watch some of the interviews of these families to know how special these families are. So we have to take it to heart and understand that these messages are for us, are for Am Yisrael, right? I remember, you know, after the Har Nof massacre, I wasn't actually living here yet, but I posted something. I think it was Facebook or something, and it said something to the defense that our response should be to search our own davening and search our own behavior in shul. And someone commented something to the effect of, "Well, how dare you blame the victims? Right? We should be blaming the Arabs." And yes, obviously, in a very infantile approach to the world, yes, okay, but that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm not saying that the victims deserved any of this or that they're to blame, Bechlal. They're, again, tremendous holy people who were chosen as korbanos, right, for whatever reason. But what is our response personally when we don't, you know, when we don't have any connection to these people other than they are Jews who died because they were Jews? What do you do with that personally? And the answer is to look inward. Chazal have told us in many, many contexts that we have to look inward. Obviously, you take practical steps and do ishtadlis, right? You have the police on the streets and you put up barriers by the bus stops, etc. Fine, but the job of us, what we are supposed to do on an individual level, right, is to look inward and see where we can grow from this. And maybe be zocha mitzashem to see the end of the tzaros, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should grant us a salvation. As we have Shabbos Mevorchem, which Chodesh Adar should be a month of simcha and sason, and the Nisim, both Nistarim and Gluyim, right, for all of Am Yisrael. Amen, Kenny Rotsim. Have a great Shabbos, everybody.